Trey Lance, Rashee Rice, and more Dynasty assets on the hot list with Rich Kooling at Dynasty Island. He's of DLF. He's of the FF Sanctuary here. And Rich, we were talking before the show here. You've got a rookie guide out, your second year in a row putting this behemoth together, a labor of love. And so just tell folks a little bit about the rookie guide here, because we're going to talk a couple questions and obviously a few rookie questions here. But what all goes into it? And honestly, what made you start this journey, which is an endless rabbit hole? You're never truly done with it. You produce it, but I'm sure there's five things you would add or adjust or keep editing until the cows come home with these types of things.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started doing it just as an added benefit just to our members, just essentially putting all my thoughts in one place. So it was a way I could combine all of my film review of the rookies, as well as my rookie model that I've got for running back, wide receiver, tight end, and then essentially my rankings. So yeah, did it last year, got to 100 players, went a little bit deeper this year. I did 118 film write-ups. So that's watching at least 3 games of every player, 6 of every quarterback, normally trying to watch at least 6 of any first or second round rookie pick. And then, yeah, doing a full film write-up, strengths, weaknesses. I do a thing called the riskometer, which is basically on a scale of 0 to 10, 10 being fantasy superstar, 0 being out the league, like what their range of outcomes are. Because I think that's sometimes difficult to convey in when you're doing rankings or tiers or things like that. So I try to add that in there as well. And then, yeah, all my rookie models and rankings, I think I went 100 deep at each position outside quarterback and tight end. So, yeah, an awful lot of information, over 200 pages this year. And, yeah, exclusive to all of our members at the Fantasy Sanctuary.
Excellent. And what did you learn from year one that you either said, hey, I got to simplify this, or, hey, I got to really do this more in depth? Was there any lessons learned on the creator side from year one and the freshman model of the guide, and now the sophomore year?
So I think I guess that the lesson I learned from year one to year two was I'm terrible at the design and making things look good. I'm all well and good at, you know, I can do pages and pages of black font on a white background, but yeah, I roped in Tom, who I do the Fantasy Sanctuary with, and he's an absolute graphics and design whiz. So he made it look good for year two, because year one
you're the
was
data
very much
guy,
black
he's
and white.
The art guy, is that how it works?
Yeah, absolutely. He's a TV editor for his day job. So yeah, graphics, design, all that kind of stuff, he's absolutely
perfect,
phenomenal with.
The
so.
Perfect pairing there. Again, you're the data scientist, and then he's the artist. So perfect there.
Exactly.
You mentioned the risk scale there. Give us a highlight or two. Again, you've got over 100 players in there, so no way you're going to give away the good stuff, the best stuff. But who kind of surprised you based on how folks were talking during the draft process that you either thought maybe were riskier or less risky when your final numbers came out?
Yeah, of course. I think there's probably two that jump out. Jaden Daniels, I think. For me, too many people are talking about him as a sure prospect. Certainly in terms of the riskometer, his range of outcomes was absolutely wild. I think, yeah, we know the fantasy ceiling is there, the rushing ability, the upside, that fantasy gold. But I have serious concerns about his ability to process from the pocket and that kind of things. And I think at the end of the day, that's what's going to keep him a starting job in the NFL. So I do think there is a level of concern and a potential that he could completely flame out very quickly. And then
one thing I want to say about Jaden Daniels is, I mean, one parallel I drew, which is we saw some fantastic in terms of fantasy outcomes, and now we're seeing him looking for a new starting job, and that's Justin Fields. And I think with rushing quarterbacks, it's really tough. And not just, hey, I'm mobile, but the highly, you know, the RG3s of the world. You see Cam Newton, obviously, in general, being a success story. He always kind of struggled in being a upper level passer. He did have that one big year they went to the Super Bowl. But with Jaden Daniels, I think it's always tough for these guys, because if they start running around and they produce really well, I think we misjudge in fantasy about, well, that means this guy's great. And we saw with Justin Fields, and I think it's really instructive to say the NFL can view that very differently. You know, that the overt rushing, but you're not doing what we want as a passer, you're not progressing there. And at some point we might just move on. It's earlier than you, the fantasy, owner that's thinking, wow, they're a top 10 option here. But the fragility of maybe that job security is what you're kind of pointing at.
Absolutely. And I think I went on a rant at the, I think week four last year about Justin Fields and how I saw him as an incredibly fragile dynasty asset because of that pocket mobility, the pocket presence, the processing ability, and quite frankly, the fact that he wasn't winning games. You know, I think we can sometimes skew fantasy points in production and think it equals good
You
quarterback
gotta win
play, you know.
games, right? I mean, you gotta be around 500.
Exactly.
You gotta push for the playoffs. You see, Trevor Lawrence, right? I mean, he's taken the team and franchise to a new level. And while the fantasy results haven't quite been there, new contract, face of the franchise, and NFL-wise, this is an overt positive. And I look at, actually, I was looking at those mobile quarterbacks, and Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts are two examples of. They kept improving as a passer. They had positive results NFL-wise. And so where they started as sort of a rough around the edges, we love the rushing, you've got to become more. And so that's going to be the key thing with these, that Fields is an example of not doing that. Is Fields, excuse me, is Daniels going to be more on the Fields level, or is he going to year two, year three, continue progressing? The team's actually winning. And I think some of those NFL type spidey senses are things we need to look out for.
Yeah, definitely. And you look at, someone like Anthony Richardson, the thing that he did great whilst he had accuracy concerns, he's got all the arm talent in the world, but he does have, some passes that he misses guys by a mile. But his ability to process from the pocket in terms of he doesn't take sacks, his pressure to sack ratio is one of the lowest coming out of any prospect out of college, and he makes the right reads. And those are the two areas that I have massive concerns about Jaden Daniels. And I think that's what's going to potentially cost him a job before you
And
mention the
unfortunately,
fact that
what?
he's tiny and he
Yeah.
takes hits like he's built like Anthony Richardson. So,
And
yeah, it could
this
cost
whole
him.
like he's up to, whatever weight. It's like I watched him most of his career, especially at Arizona State. He was playing at like 185, 190. Like you never see that frame. And especially a guy like you said, reactive to pressure and getting blown up. And honestly, Washington just had a quarterback. That his biggest thing was pressure to sack and being a problem. It was a problem in college, problem in the pros, Sam Howell, and he got one opportunity and out. And you're going to get more opportunity out of Jaden Daniels, but they brought in another guy that has the same concern. And it's just kind of eerie that it's on the same franchise. Did they really fix the O-line? A lot of things where it's like you're going down the same rabbit hole. And while the upside may be higher, the same concern may ultimately take him down. Who's your secondary? Who's your second guy you wanted to mention?
It's Jermaine Burton. Obviously, incredible landing spot with the Bengals. I think in terms of pure talent, in terms of film grade, he was a top five receiver for me in this class. Obviously, some I'll call them off the field concerns, but obviously they happened on the field. Yeah, he could be out of the league during training camp. Let's be brutally honest. You know, there's some demons in there. There's some question marks, and I wouldn't be shocked if we some. Stories came out during training camp or something like that. Hopefully, he keeps it all together and he's allowed to put on the field the talent because he's incredibly talented. And I think he's got a huge potential as a fantasy asset because he's a guy that, he's going to see those high value touches as a receiver. He's great going deep and, he's useful in and around the red zone. But there is a world where, I talked about that 0-10 of fantasy superstar out of the league. He was one of the few prospects that was very much that 0-10 because he could be a superstar and he could be out of the league. And quite frankly, I'm not sure there's any room for anything in between. I think he's going to be boom or bust.
And unfortunately, we're probably going to focus on the, gritting our teeth and wondering if he's going to get through and be a good soldier right now because T. Higgins signed his tender. And so Burton at best is going to be the wide receiver three, and Higgins gone would have been good news for an early opportunity. But Burton needs to play nice from now all the way basically until week one, 2025. And then still, like I always get into this, is that really a good situation? Because if you have an all-star on the other side at wide receiver, There is some sort of limiting ceiling in almost every case. Every once in a while, you get the scenarios where I remember it was Julio Jones and Roddy White in Atlanta, for example. You had, Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. Some of them make it work, but they really have to dominate. And I just wonder if Jermaine Burton sitting there with Ja'Marr Chase is going to be there pretty much the entire time, that it's going to be really tough to find a new ceiling. We've been saying that about T. Higgins, really good player, but the Robin to the Batman. So I just kind of wonder, you might get a really good player that their ceiling is limited because they have a true dominator on the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. I think his ceiling's always going to be, he's probably never going to be a fantasy wide receiver one, even if he is that kind of superstar talent and does stay on the straight and narrow, just because, Ja'Marr Chase is going to see 150 plus targets each year, and there's only so many targets that can go around an offense, isn't there?
Trey Lance, first player I wanted to bring up here in terms of one of your guys, one of your most interesting players that I would say. So Trey Lance, where were you, when he was in San Francisco still? He ends up getting traded for a day three pick, goes to Dallas, which is pretty wide open now. Kind of talk through his profile dynasty wise and what you find intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, I've never been the biggest Trey Lance believer. I wasn't one of these that was, standing on the table banging the drum for him as a fantasy asset when he was a rookie, when he was potentially starting in San Francisco. But I just feel like, for me, I'm always looking for that undervalued player that's got the potential to spike in value. And I think quarterback is one of those positions where we can absolutely see that happen. And I just feel like the fantasy community has completely given up on Trey Lance when he's had four games through his career,
Crazy.
two complete monsoon where it, nobody could complete a pass. It was an absolute joke. And then the fourth game, he got injured. And it's like, this is a top three pick. I get that the San Francisco 49ers gave up on him, but that was because they had another franchise quarterback that, if they'd have kept Trey Lance around, it would have caused issues. So they had to move on from him. But I just can't believe that there's not a team next year that's gonna at least give Trey Lance a 50-50 shot at earning a starting job. And if there's a world where he starts even for a season, that rushing ability is still there that had him as a top eight dynasty quarterback 2 years ago. Like, all that talent is still there. If he is on the field, he is going to be a fantasy superstar. And for the price of a third round pick in a super flex league, what better lottery ticket have you got than a guy that, yeah, may never start, but that's the reason why he's worth a third round pick. But there's probably a, what, 25% chance that he gets a starting job next year. And you can go out and acquire him for a third, and he could start for you probably 14, 15 weeks of the season. It's I just think there's I've never seen a player be a top three pick and never actually get the chance to start. And
Right.
I just think
Not,
that there's a scenario where he's going to get a chance to start.
he didn't really get a chance to fail. And I'll go all the way back to college where, let's put the NFL plus the college. I mean, he might have 20 starts. 20 starts post high school, which is, they talk about 1 year starters in college. That's Trey Lance. And it was at a small school. And then I think he played like one game or something and got dinged up, or their season was canceled. I can't remember what actually occurred. And he's just like, I'm done. And it was just like, accelerate me to the draft. And like you said, the rushing upside is pronounced. So I'm pretty excited because, like you said, he hasn't gotten a real shake. And I'm not saying, Dallas is going to move on from Dak and give him a shot. But like you said, he's a free agent, and he's going to get something. I mean, every quarterback, if Minshew can get a 2 for 25 or whatever and a legit chance on an open depth chart, Trey Lance should get at least that. And I actually think it's pretty interesting to see if Dak were to go down this year, what's Dallas going to do? Are they going to give Trey Lance, who's now been in the system for over a year, a shot? Or are they going to go back to Cooper Rush, who has had some success, more of a traditional guy, in within their system? So I think that's fascinating, even from this year centric as well. Trevor Lawrence, huge contract for him, extending him out. We talked about him already earlier in the show. What do you think about him, the dynasty asset, and him, just within the hierarchy of the position? More of these leagues go into super flex, so obviously quarterback becoming very important in terms of how you view someone within the quarterback one or two prism.
Yeah, I mean he's my highest rostered quarterback in across all my dynasty leagues. I just believe in the talent. I think that, you know, we saw it at the back end of the 2022 season. For me, he is a superstar quarterback that just has never had the situation, the surrounding talent, the opportunity to blossom. And I think that whilst he might not see that again this year, I'm just
I
going to
was going to say,
continue.
what I was going to say, when is that coming? Because right, you could say he's had a tough draw the last couple of years. They've spent around him. They have spent big on Christian Kirk. They brought in Evan Ingram. They re-signed him. I mean, they brought in Calvin Ridley. They just spent a first-round pick on a wide receiver. They've done a lot, and I just either they're bad at that, and they just haven't optimized what they've spent around him. And now that they've spent on him, I just wonder what it's going to take here. I know they've had a few dropped long touchdowns and things like that. You can just see the reel on X over and over again. But I don't know. I expected more rushing from him. That was also part of it on the fantasy side. So he's been a lot more of a pocket passer. And then you say, well, he doesn't have elite weapons. He has good enough weapons, I guess. Like I think there's a divide between he's a good NFL quarterback and like a guy that can actually finish in the top five or six ever.
Yeah, I think I agree with you that he's probably never going to be a top five quarterback for fantasy because he doesn't have that rushing upside, and I don't think he's ever going to be in an offense where he's going to, you know, approach 50 touchdowns and things like that. But I just at a point in Superflex leagues in fantasy, I'm just going to continue to bet on the talent because I believe he's going to be an above average NFL starter for the next 15 years, and I think that he's not being valued like that currently in fantasy. I think that I hear you around the concern around the contract, but if you actually go and look at it, the way the Jaguars have structured the contract is absolutely mental. How the Jaguars front office approach contracts, I don't understand how any of them got jobs. But he's actually got relatively low cap hits over the next 4 seasons.
They've
The
already been
fifth and
spending
sixth
around him,
year.
though. No, I
Well,
know.
exactly.
It's going to take a while for it to come home, but they've already been spending. My point is that they've already been spending around him, and I was a big fan of Brian Thomas. I don't know where you sit on him, so I don't think that's going to really solve anything per se. And then they brought in Gabe Davis. I wasn't a huge fan of that, so we will see. I mean, in my opinion, they're a team without an alpha. I mean, it's probably Evan Ingram this year, to be honest. You know, if there was a go-to guy per se, and you know, he's not on the elite, you know, Kelce Andrews type level, in my opinion. So.
Yeah, I think it's basically the argument with Trevor Lawrence is what do you want from your fantasy quarterback? If you're playing in one quarterback's leagues where you're chasing a top five player, you're probably not going to want to rush to Trevor Lawrence because I think he's going to spend the next 10 years being a solid back end QB1.
Okay.
But if you're playing in Superflex leagues where that stability, reliable production week in, week out as a back end QB1 is incredibly valuable. I think he's currently undervalued in dynasty circles and in Superflex leagues because
Okay.
he's going as a high end QB2, and I think that's quite frankly his floor for the next 10 years.
Fair enough. How about Rashee Rice? How are you handling the possibility of a suspension? They also brought in Xavier Worthy with a first round pick. They brought in Marquise Brown. So competition for targets, it's not just going to be a 3A dot over there to Rashee Rice six, seven times a game like it was last year. Mahomes and company are going to have more options on offense. And Rashee Rice, a lot of people are discounting him pretty heavily based on the assumption that he's A, suspended, and B, it's going to happen this year, and C, it's going to be for a while.
Yeah, I just think any time these situations pop up where there's pending suspensions, I'm always going to buy the dip because I think we always over egg and overestimate how much of an impact that has. You know, I'm not a legal expert. I don't know the ins and outs of how long he's going to be suspended, but he's down at wide receiver 34 in current ADP. Like
Yeah.
he's being valued as if he's missing the whole year. So anything less than a full year suspension, which if he got a full year, I'd be absolutely gobsmacked, I think is a discount. So I'm happy to take a bet on a second year player who, you know, is tied to an elite quarterback, is in ascended through the year, and I think he's an offense that knows how to utilize his skill set and is going to get the best out of him. I think if there was no suspension, we'd be talking about him as a top 20 wide receiver. I can now get him 15 spots later at wide receiver at 34 because there's potential that I might be without him for maybe what, 8 games, something like that. Look, I'm playing Dynasty. I'm looking at this over the next 3-4 years. I'm not worried about necessarily just this season. So yeah, if you can buy any discount, I'm absolutely scooping that up.
Yeah, he was, and especially, you know, the next moment, if you haven't gotten the discount or you haven't gotten a deal done now, the next moment would be anytime there's news about a possible suspension or, hey, there's going to be a suspension or when it is announced or something like that. And, you know, I've got friends in legal places, and the first thing they said was, hey, this may not happen in 2024. This is something that can get pushed out and it can be a 2025 problem. And the other part is year one hit, you're locked in here with Mahomes. It's a 1 year deal. And, you know, with Marquise Brown, it's a prove it deal there. You know, Xavier Worthy, again, he's a first round wide receiver that may or may not work out. I'm a big fan, but again, that doesn't mean he's going to be a year one rocket ship. And Rashee Rice, he was the offense last year in a lot of ways, especially when Kelsey, you know, they were just rubbing sticks together when Kelsey was limited. So I don't know why he's in my top 25, and I just, you know, at least, you know, 10, 15 spots higher than where the consensus is there. Cooper Kupp coming off of injury, the declarative statement the past few weeks has been, hey, he's healthy. And it felt like he wasn't playing healthy the last cross section of last year when he actually did come back. And you got Puka Nacua, major breakout star in year one. Do you think these two can kind of replicate what's going on in Miami? Do you think they can be a massive market share duo there? And Cooper Kupp, also another cheap, very cheap wide receiver with a profile.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, they did coexist. If you look at the last six weeks of the season, Cooper Kupp was wide receiver 9. Puka Nacua, I don't know the number exactly, but was a top 6 receiver during that stretch. Like, they did co-produce down the stretch. I think if Cooper Kupp had taken those 4 weeks where he was clearly hurt and struggling and just not played, I think he'd be valued a lot higher in Dynasty. I think the problem is that people look at his season as a whole and look at his average points per game, and it was down. But the reason it was down was he was playing through injury and wasn't healthy.
So, yeah, when he was soaking up routes, and doing, you know, doing those tough things when he wasn't right, he wasn't getting open, wasn't able to cut and separate and all those things. One thing I've said, Rich, over the course of time is you get the guy plays through injury. And when we get, especially when we get to the off season, like the optics of how bad it looks. Like, I remember there were a couple of years Zeke played through injury. He was a workhorse. And a lot of guys probably would have just been, hey, I'm going to miss a few weeks.
Yep.
And I find the guys that sit out and get healthy and then come back, even though they missed games, they're not viewed as harshly as the guys that go out there and they're producing at like a 70%, 60% clip of what they normally would do. And they just get hammered by the, oh, look how bad this guy is. He's fallen off a cliff. He's horrible. And it's like the guy was doing it for his team. And it's like, I think that that profile that you just outlined is one that usually gets discounted and improperly so.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Cooper Kupp's going as like a wide receiver 3 at the moment. And I think that anytime you can get a player at that point in their career, yeah, you're probably not going to have much resale value. But actually, his production is going to be, I think, borderline wide receiver 1 as a wide receiver 2. His production over the next 2 years is probably going to massively outweigh the cost to go and acquire him. Yes, you're lighting that, you know, asset on fire because you've not got the resale value in 2 years' time. But actually, if you're a win-now team, there's a fantastic amount of production that I think sat there at a hugely discounted price.
And good luck trying to find the young player in that similar price range that ever produces at the clip that Cooper Kupp, if healthy, could easily do so right now for you. So that's always the, what's the calculus on, you know, some day 2 guy ever producing like a Cooper Kupp for any span of time. That's always the allure of getting, you know, the next guy, the younger guy that I'm going to have forever. And it's like, well, why don't you take the guy that is probably going to do it right now?
But, yeah, 100%.
Last guy here is Michael Mayer. I think you're going to have to sell me on this one just a little bit. So I'm hoping you're going to talk about how they're going to play different roles in the offense because they drafted Brock Bowers. And they also, no offense, Mark Gardner Minshew, they're frankly looking for a long-term quarterback. So they've got a lot of weapons, lacking in terms of the quarterback and the upside proposition to be the true point guard of fantasy production there. Michael Mayer, the profile. Boy, 1 year, and then all of a sudden they're moving over to an elite prospect in Brock Bowers.
Yeah, and look, When I say I like Michael Mayer, I think you need to take into account the cost
Oh, of course.
because, yeah, I'm not saying that I'm expecting him to be a fantasy superstar, but he's tight end 29 in ADP. Like, there's probably some leagues, if you're in a shallow league, where he's sat on waiver wires right now. Yes, there's a lot of competition for targets. They've obviously added Brock Bowers, but this is still an elite prospect. We know that the tight end position takes time to develop. We've been spoilt in recent years with someone like Sam Laporta and stuff. But look, Trey McBride was an afterthought after his rookie year. And now go and look at how much Trey McBride is worth in your dynasty leagues. I think that Michael Mayer is an elite talent. I still believe that's there. And I think that this offense is going to utilize both him and Brock Bowers on the field. If you look at the way the Raiders are talking, I don't think they're viewing Brock Bowers as a traditional inline tight end. I think they're viewing him basically as a big slot receiver that can potentially line up inline as and when we need it. And I think that we're going to see both Michael Mayer and Brock Bowers probably over a 70% snap share this year. And I think that there is huge amount of potential for, Michael Mayer to be on the fantasy radar. Now, I'm looking for, at the tight end position, elite production or a lottery ticket. And, at the prices that he's going, we're talking about players like Hunter Henry, Daniel Bellinger, Jonnu Smith, people like that. I would rather roster Michael Mayer, who I think is an elite talent. He was a 96th percentile prospect for me in my tight end model. And I think that after 1 year of, let's be honest, Josh McDaniels didn't, I'm not sure we could take anything from that offense last year. So I'm happy to take a punt on a guy that I know is talented, that, yeah, he may not be top of a depth chart, but actually I think him and Brock Bowers are going to play different NFL positions. And just because in fantasy we see only one tight end on the field, I don't think that's necessarily how it's going to play out in the NFL.
And you can easily make the argument that, hey, the best four pass catchers, and if you put four on the field at one time for the Raiders, it's going to be Davante Adams, Jakobi Meyers, Brock Bowers, and Michael Mayer. You know that their wide receiver three probably shouldn't be, no offense, Trey Turner, Tucker and others, are not going to be as prominent as maybe some of these other teams if you put out your best five, so to speak, along with Zamir White or the pass catcher du jour out of the backfield there. Rich Cooling, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your time and talents. Where can folks find you? And again, where can they find your rookie guide as well as some of your other content you are working on and have already produced?
Yeah, no, re really appreciate you having me on. It's always great to jump on and chat things through. So I'm on Twitter at Dynasty Island. You can find the majority of our work, which is on the Fantasy Sanctuary. We've got the YouTube channel. Most things are available to members. You can join on there. We're at the FF Sanctuary. The rookie guide's available to all members as an exclusive on there.
Great stuff from Rich in this episode. Also, want to point everybody, show is not over. We got some good pre-show call content. If you want to know about watching in terms of following the NFL, being a diehard, finding the games, watching the games, all of that, we had a pretty good discussion. So I'm going to clip up a little bit of what you had. So a little bit of highlight there from some of our pre-show discussion, a little after hours. So stay tuned after the formal closing because we are going to get a little more dialogue from Rich Cooling, much appreciated for him as extra time in this one. So that's going to do it here on the main portion of the show. I'm Chad Parsons. Until next time, never settle, refuse to be average, and keep building those dynasties. I will. There's a few podcasts out there, and I've listened to a couple of them over the course of time, just about how the rest of the world reacts to the NFL. Like, it's far different, just in terms of there's a smaller faction, of it. I've had a few people that are like, yeah, I play fantasy and it's like very hard. Like my family and a bunch of my friends don't really understand. And it's like this little community, and thank goodness for online, right? That you can meet people from around the globe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I mean, I was lucky enough. I played a bit when I was younger, so I'm in a league. My what I'd class as my home league. I've got this 14 of us that we played together at what you would call college. But yeah, that was the only fantasy I knew for about 10 years, and then once we got into COVID, I sort of dived into Twitter, and yeah, it's sort of all grown from there. And suddenly, my eyes are wide open to all sorts of different worlds.
Are you able to watch? I mean, do you have to get NFL Plus? I know even, I could watch on TV, but what's your methodology of watching or consuming?
So I guess there's two ways. So we've got Sky TV, which is like your cable or stuff like
Okay.
that. And they show an early game and a late game every Sunday. And
Okay.
then they have the Monday night football games. Or what I do is I pay, I think it's £150 for Game Pass.
Okay.
And then I can watch any game, apart from the games that are live on Sky.
People from the States say that the international version of Game Pass is better than the
100%.
domestic version. Yeah, that
Yeah, the I've got so I pay £150 and I can watch any game live ever.
Yeah.
I
See, we
can
can't watch the
watch.
live, and that's probably the thing because they say, "Hey, you guys can't. You don't really have a local market." And I was actually going to ask. I mean, do you
Exactly.
guys have a team that comes up more on those early and late slates on Sunday more than other teams? Like, is there actually like they're trying to foster a fan favorite team over there, or not really?
So they try and cover as many teams as possible to appeal to everyone. Obviously, the last like 5 or 6 years, they've tried to push the Jags a little bit,
Yeah.
just where they've been over every year and stuff. And then I can't remember if it's 2 or 3 years ago. Obviously, the NFL's got the each team has media market rights globally. So like in the UK, I think there's 6 or 7 teams that have got their own rights to basically have a media market here. So like we've got the Jets, the Bears, the Jags, things like that. So those teams tend to be on a little bit more. But to be honest, I don't really pay attention to what's on Sky because I'm just watching.
Yeah.
So I have a setup where I've got the Jets game because I'm a Jets fan, Game Pass, and then whatever other game I think is particularly interest that I'll try and watch, and then watch those live at 6 p.m., which is our early slate window when that starts for us on a Sunday, and then try and watch as much coaches film as I can when that gets released in the week.
Wow. Yeah, we don't have the live function, so if you wanted to watch live, I watch everything after the fact, and it's really tough because, you get a lot of people complain that you have choices, but yet the choices are your local team, which I wonder, do you get every game that's in over there? Do you get every like when you said the Jags are over there every year, is that game in addition to the other two slates?
Yeah, so we have so all of the London games are on
No
what
matter
we'd
what.
call terrestrial, I guess you'd call like free to air
Sure.
channels. So not cable.
Like almost like an antenna. I don't know. They don't have antennas anymore, but that equivalency.
That old school. Yeah. So all of the London games are free for everyone to watch because the whole idea is that they're trying to build that market, aren't they? So
Yeah.
whilst the normal games are all on subscription sites and cable, those London games are free to watch.
Okay, very cool. So yeah, I picked out a bunch of guys that you were high on, reading through a lot of your content there, so we can go through profiles in that regard. And you got a big draft, a big rookie guide out, so I wanted to, not pry too much, but pry a little bit, so folks can get a little preview there. So very
No, I
good
really
stuff.
appreciate it. Looks like a great show. So yeah, I really appreciate
Yeah, are
you
you on
taking it.
tour? Do you got a bunch of other podcast appearances coming up?
Not massively, no.
Okay.
I'll be honest, I spent so much time getting the rookie guide done.
Yeah.
I was then kind of pretty much burnt out, if I can be honest. So I've kind of taken a couple of weeks off. Me and the family went away for a week to Italy and
Okay.
yeah, just sort of took a bit of a 2 3 week break just because it was as we got up to the draft, it was every
Labor of
night
love.
just
Yeah.
yeah, very much so.
I hear
So it
you.
was yeah, took a nice break and yeah, now getting back into things.
So did you do a pre-draft and then did you update thing post-draft, or did you just do one version based on like players only and not actually where they went in the draft and all that?
Yeah, no, so I did so I as part of the guide I do a film review on everyone. So I watch at least 3 games, or if it's a quarterback, at least 6. So I did 80 players in the first pre-draft. So that came out around the combine. and then again did a post draft with I think it was 118 players, and then all my rookie models, write ups of like overvalued, undervalued, sleepers, all that kind of stuff in there.
Very nice. Is this your first one?
Second. Last year was the first. Okay. Yeah, it was one of those that someone sort of said, "Oh, you should put all this stuff in a guide." And I was like, oh, "Okay, yeah, I'll do that." And I started with like 30 players, and I think I ended up with 100, and it just grew and grew and grew. And then I was "Yeah, I'll go one better. I'll do." I sort of got my list of everyone, and then as I was grinding towards the draft, I was like, "Why did I say I'd do 118?" Because trying to get film on some of these, you know, unheralded quarterbacks and things that. It was just quite frankly ridiculous. So yeah, I think it'll be slightly smaller next year. As
I used to do like 80, 100, 120 players on my rookie big board. And the more I thought about it over the years, I was like, why am I sitting here hand-wringing about who's 70 and who's 92? Because I have to think of it, the average person, and not even the average person, I would say 99% of people who are looking at this and drafting, and they're never going to go that deep, because invariably you're going to have a player at like 42. You know, that is not never anyone else's top 60 or something. And so that's going to be the guy. If they ask you and they say, hey, I'm super deep in this draft, who should I take? You just say that guy. Like, you don't have to imagine that you have to go to 59 overall to draft, you know, a 60 player. So it's just,
It's like,
so I was like, what am I doing? I think I'm wasting a lot of time here because
this
it's
year. I agree. I think it took me about three. So Davius Richards, he went to a HBCU, and I spent about 3 weeks trying to get film on him because I'd read an article that someone thought he had potential that he could be like a, you know, round seven drafted. And then
they went to the HBCU combine. How to get this.
I took forever to get
film. It's addictive. It's addictive to go towards all those little sleepers and stuff. And man, I mean, I root for all those guys, but unfortunately, you might get out of all those giant bucket of guys, one of them might actually make the team. So it's like we get all excited right after the draft because we hear all these guys that sign, and it's like they're wide receiver 10. So let's be realistic on what their chances are to make that team.
Yeah, absolutely. Although we've got one this year, so Lewis Rees-Samet, obviously, you know, British guy. I've probably more aware of him than most. So yeah, hopefully if he cracks on, then I can claim that as being knowledge about him before he became household name.
We might see him return. I don't think the Chiefs play in the kickoff game, do they? But like, that would be wild if he was literally the player that returned like the first kickoff of the season and the new look kickoff. That would be hilarious.
Yeah, that would be wild. And I think he's going to be great at that. So yeah, it would be very interesting if he does.
It's a new position, frankly. I mean, it's a new position. All the teams are trying to figure out. It honestly might get 15, 20 more people getting jobs, you know, if they're really good at that one thing.
Because it's going to keep Cordarrelle Patterson in the league for another 10 years.
Don't you tease me. Don't tease me. It took the Patriots to turn him into a running back, a full-fledged running back.
Yeah, it's ridiculous how long someone could be in the league before he actually gets utilized correctly.
Yeah.